Good morning. I bring you all greetings this morning from my home church community, Chicago Community Mennonite Church in Chicago, and know that they are also worshiping in solidarity with each of you this morning in World Communion Sunday. Before we get started, I just want to say a word of thanks to Anna for her hospitality to me and welcoming me and Jaleesa here. It's very nice to be with you all. I also want to call out, about 10 years ago, I was a younger man, 10 years younger, and discerning whether or not to pursue full-time ministry, and someone in the room today was very influential in that journey, that process for me, and that was Lois. And Lois was a conference minister at the time, encouraged me towards the ordination track, and has been someone that I've always looked up to, and just want to give her a big shout out too before I begin, because if I'm extra nervous this morning, it's because the former conference minister is here in the audience with me. I also, as a younger man, started to attend Central District Conference gatherings. And not growing up in the Mennonite Church, I grew up in the Apostolic Christian Church of America, which is kind of an offshoot of Anabaptist history, a much more conservative tradition. But as I found my way to the Mennonites, one of the things that attracted me was unbelievable, inspiring fellow clergy. And I don't want to say it too loud in this room because he might get a big head, but Carl was one of those people that I met at Central District Conference, someone who inspired me, someone who I look up to, and someone who that I just adore greatly. So Carl, I want to say hello to you as well. I know he loves that. I know he just loves that. This morning, I woke up very early from Chicago and got in my car and drove my way through Gary, Indiana, where I picked up Jaleesa, our brand new Faith in Place Indiana outreach coordinator. And on the way here with Jaleesa, Jaleesa confided in me, and now I'm going to confess to you all. She's like, Brian, you're the only Mennonite I know. And I said, well, that's about to change. So I just really want to encourage you all, Assembly Mennonite, to be on your best behavior and be sure to welcome Jaleesa to be with us. Jaleesa is a big moment for Faith in Place in the May of 2020. Hoosier Interfaith Power and Light, based out of Indianapolis, reached out to Faith in Place. It was the middle of the pandemic and said, we would love to partner with you, Faith in Place, an organization that had 20 years of experience organizing people of diverse faiths throughout Illinois, to really organize across Indiana as well. And because it was May of 2020, and at that time I had no clue what the future of nonprofits were, let alone the world, I said, that's very flattering. We'd love to continue that conversation, but not yet. And we did continue that conversation in prayer and discernment for over a year and a half. And this year we announced a merger of Hoosier Interfaith Power and Light and Faith in Place, as well as Wisconsin Interfaith Power and Light, and are now working across the three states together as people of faith, building a grassroots movement towards what our mission statement says is environmental and racial justice. And so it's just a greater delight. Of course, I'd love to come and preach at Assembly as a fellow Mennonite anytime, but it's a delight to be here specifically with our new Indiana Outreach Coordinator as our programs and our tools are adapting, evolving as we explore this partnership and merger. It's just so great to have Jaleesa full-time hired, getting there. So be sure to get to know her, meet her at the table. We're gonna lead just a rocking workshop afterwards where we're gonna really dive into that merger and what the programs are that we have offering and the ways that we are growing a collective movement in solidarity with the poor to solve and bring about justice for environmental and racial injustice. Not only is today World Communion Sunday where we think about and we take communion together in solidarity with other Christians across the world in ecumenical fashion, remembering that we are all connected through the common bread and the common wine together. But as I reviewed the lectionary text, trying to wrestle, what sort of scripture shall I bring to Assembly Mennonite? I was looking at the lectionary and noticing that it's also the season of creation. And it's at the tail end of season of creation. Season of creation kicks off on September 1st, known as the World Day of Prayer for our common home. And it culminates in the Feast of St. Francis on October 4th. And if a reminder, I had to remind myself about some of the history of St. Francis. But St. Francis originally was a son of a rich merchant in Italy, had a lot of wealth as a young individual, and was living the good life. He liked the great outdoors, he liked to party, he liked to do all the things and experience life in all its exuberance, to travel, to sell the silk that they had. And it was this individual, this man, who had an encounter with a beggar on the street, who came to him while he was selling the silk, and it really disturbed him. And St. Francis, later became known as St. Francis, couldn't get away from that sort of image. And he went off to seek adventure in war. He became a soldier. And it was when he was out at war as a soldier that he had a vision of giving his life to Christ and communing and supping in solidarity with the poor for the rest of his life. As he was telling his friends and family and often being in trouble with his own father, he was asked the question, "Will you marry?" And he said, "Yes, I have the finest of brides. Her name is Lady Poverty." Today we celebrate the feast of St. Francis, the patron saint of ecology, the patron saint of the blessing of the animals, the patron saint where St. Francis would be out sleeping in solidarity with the poor, preaching to the birds and the trees. And so as I thought of that, I came across this passage in the lectionary of Mark 11, where Jesus curses the fig tree. In Mark 11, Jesus is traveling for Passover with his disciples. Everyone gathers at that time to the big city of Jerusalem. Everybody gathers, and you bring your sacrifice as you travel to Jerusalem for Passover. And Jesus was a little different. He didn't take the Roman interstate to get to Jerusalem, but he passed by the way of Bethphage and Bethany. And Bethphage and Bethany, historical documents teach us, are poor communities. Communities that maybe suffer from more air pollution. Communities that don't have the Jerusalem infrastructure to carry away their waste and their trash. Communities that are historically divested from, that if you aren't a part of the elite or the social class or the university, you live in Bethphage and Bethany. And Jesus gathered with his disciples the night before with his siblings in Bethphage and Bethany, and there he learned a very troubling fact. You see, if you were poor and you couldn't afford a lamb or a calf to take for sacrifice for Passover, you were allowed to go to the streets of Jerusalem and capture a pigeon. A pigeon that's everywhere across the streets, and you could sacrifice a pigeon for free. And that was an acceptable sacrifice for Passover. But when Jesus was in Bethphage and Bethany, he learned that the synagogue bought off by Rome, the synagogue that was bought off by Rome because 200 years ago the Roman Empire realized, oh, the Maccabean Revolution happened from the synagogue, from people gathering in solidarity with the poor. The synagogue then produced a pigeon-approved sacrifice. You couldn't just go and gather any pigeon from the streets no more, but you had to have a specific pigeon that was approved by the synagogue in order to sacrifice. And to make things worse, not only did you have to have a synagogue-approved pigeon, but you had to take your Palestinian coins and exchange them into Roman coins at an exorbitant interest rate. So no longer was the worship rooted in solidarity with each other and the poor, but the worship was rooted in being approved and being bought off and in solidarity with the empire. And Jesus sent his disciples the night before, the text tells us, as they were leaving Bethany, or just in the verse before, he went to Bethany with the 12 first. They scoped it out, and then they came back. And now we understand why Jesus was so upset. As him and his disciples were in solidarity with the poor and with each other, they saw that the system was oppressing those that were trying to come and to worship. And so as they're leaving Bethany, Jesus was hungry. And seeing in the distance a fig tree and leaf, he went to it to find out if it had any fruit. And when he reached it, he found nothing but leaves because it was not bearing fruit. The fig tree is in the Jewish ancient text is a symbol of the temple and all of its order. The first fruits that were brought to the temple were the figs that were growing. A fig bearing fruit, a tree bearing fruit of the fig, was a sign that worship was moving forward in a way as God intended. And so Jesus, seeing that there is no fig, is a symbol that the temple is not bearing fruit. And the temple is not bearing fruit because the worship is no longer in solidarity with each other and the poor. Now notice that Jesus curses the tree. He's upset that the temple has lost its way. And it's at this point, I just want to be crystal clear with you. The synagogue in Rome ancient texts teach us, was bought off by the Roman Empire. But there were numerous other Jewish movements and synagogues that were also speaking out against this atrocity. And Jesus joined that speaking out of atrocity and said, this worship that isn't in solidarity with the poor, that's oppressive, is a tree that does not bear fruit. And it is a tree that I curse and separate myself from. Now notice that Jesus didn't take individual action. He spoke out against the tree, but his solution wasn't that we should cut down the fig trees, or his solution was that we should stop eating figs. His solution was much more systemic. Jesus then, and we skipped this portion of the text reading, but you're familiar with the text. Jesus then organized a protest. Him, in solidarity with the poor, and Bethany and Bethphage, they came together and they overthrew the tables. And they cleansed out the temple, and they said, my house is a prayer for people of all nations. He took action against the root of the power, the root of the oppressor. He did not assign blame to the individuals who are part of the system, but instead he said, this system is corrupt, and we need to organize together to come across and take on directly that power. This, to me, is what it means to be faithful. This, to me, is what it means to follow Jesus. Jesus, after cleansing the temple, then comes back, and the disciples notice, look, Jesus, the fig tree that you cursed has withered. Again, a symbol of how our worship must be rooted in solidarity with the poor, for if it is not, our churches wither and die. Our churches no longer have the worship and connection to each other that we lift up in something like the Feast of St. Francis, that we lift up in something like World Communion Sunday, that we lift up when we take communion with each other, remembering that the bread and the wine that we drink connects us deeply with one another. At Faith in Place, this is what we seek to do, is to bring our faith communities together. It's a particularly interesting moment for us as we try to work across three states. So often, not only are we siloed between rural, semi-urban, and urban communities, but we're also siloed in that Indiana does its thing, Illinois does its thing, Wisconsin does its other thing. Recently, at our Big Green Team Summit, we have a network of 253 faith communities who have an active green team. That's three or more people in the community that are working with our outreach staff from regional locations, folks like Jaleesa, doing the good work, exploring how can we serve the poor in our community, how can we take action on behalf of our common home through our energy and water and our food and land use and our advocacy and our youth programming. And as we bring these communities together, it was so striking. Recently we had our Big Green Team Summit, and a small group of us had a book discussion afterwards. And there's about 30 people on the Zoom room discussing what we had heard. About 900 people came to this Catherine Hayhoe talk on her book, Saving Us, a fantastic book talking about ways to connect your passion to concerns about climate change. And what was interesting to me was not the conversation itself, but the tenor of the conversation, because we had a farmer from Southern Illinois, an individual from a university in Central Illinois, a real estate lawyer from Milwaukee, another individual from Indianapolis, an individual from Gary, an individual from Chicago. And we shared in common a common concern about climate change, but how it manifested in our local community was quite different. And in fact, the conversation got tense. I don't know if any of you have been in kind of fundraising, executive director mode like I am, but you bring people together who are generous to your organization. You want them to have a good time, and all of a sudden they start to kind of butt up against each other in conversation, and you're getting a little nervous, like, is this okay? But I realized, where are the rooms where we bring people together from Goshen to Waukegan to Milwaukee to Madison to Cairo to Champaign-Urbana, as people who care about climate change together, but to bring our different perspectives? It was a unique thing, and at first we had to figure out our rhythm together. How do we share a common understanding, but yet bring our unique individual experiences? How do we be in solidarity with one another, prioritizing the poor? So today I'd like to invite you, as you take communion on World Communion Sunday, to just lift up in your hearts. All of us know individuals from across the world. To center them as we take community, and to lift up the ways that we are connected in beautiful worship together. May it be so.